Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack. Save $200 when you put in code word HOWIE3. Sale is just for this week only and while supplies last. Order at EdenPure.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I don't want to waste any time here because we have a big guest we're very lucky to have on with us. Alex Marlowe from Breitbart has a new book out. It's called Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. It's a stellar read. It can be a guide for all of the fake news, and it really does take you deeper into how much they have weaponized the media at this point against the average individual. Alex, thank you very much for joining the Grace Curley Show.
Grace, I'm so excited to be on with you. Thank you.
All right, Alex, I want to start because I actually was talking about this a little earlier today, how to try to figure out what the media is going to do next in regards to this lab leak theory. You have to get into the mind of a Trump-deranged liberal. But what's funny is at the beginning of your book, you describe how you kind of submerged yourself in the liberal ideology at a young age, even though you weren't a liberal. You just kind of were like a spy and you started figuring out how they live.
That's exactly right. That is my entire upbringing. I figured out at least maybe I was 15, 16. I was sort of had the conservative leaning views, but I grew up in West LA. And when I got into UC Berkeley, home of the free speech movement and infinity hippies, I had to go and I had to check it out. And I really did stir a little bit of trouble there, but I really saw it as an observation exercise where I got to be inside the institutional left, understand how they think, what they react to, what foods they eat, and it's benefited me ever since.
Yeah, and I loved hearing the story about how you met Andrew Breitbart and that entire thing. That was a really fun part of the book for me to read. But I think the part of it that my audience will really enjoy is when you have the chapter called Meet the Press, because you do go over the players that a lot of us think of every day, like George Stephanopoulos, Jake Tapper, Chris Cuomo. But you go into some of the people who might not stick out, people who you might not have name recognition for, but who really do control a lot of the media.
Yeah, this is a great point, and it's something that I'm actually going to have a story on this at Breitbart.com coming up. One of my favorite examples is people don't realize Karine Jean-Pierre, Biden's deputy press secretary, is married to a CNN anchor named Suzanne Malvo. You would think that would be something everyone would know, is that the number two person in the press shop, and Biden's is literally going to bed with a CNN anchor. This is the sort of thing that in the past, you know, it would be an outrage, yet now we barely even talk about it. Cory Booker hired Jeff Zucker, the CNN boss's teenage son, to be a teenage consultant on his startup, a tech startup he had. It's stuff you can't make up. If I made this stuff up, you would think there's no way that's true. It's all true, and there's probably at least a dozen examples of these that are broken down in the book.
Yeah, and it's really entertaining. I think that's the part of the book I like the most, is that you do go through all of the connections, but then you add stuff in like, oh, speaking of Jeff Zucker's son, he threw him a bat mitzvah where Drake performed for $250,000. It does give it a little bit of the gossipy end to it, which I enjoy. Alex, I wanted to ask you, the timing of this book couldn't be more perfect because you do talk a lot about Bloomberg and their relationship with China. Can you kind of go into that for my listeners?
Yeah, it's amazing to see so much China-centric news. I guess I could have anticipated it, but I'm a little fortunate in that regard that so much of the news of the week this week is China-centric. And I really looked at America's corporate media structure, and this was the point of the book. Was I spent a year investigating exactly what was motivating the people making the decisions in the various newsrooms. And I noticed this culture of corporatism, where it's beyond liberal bias. It is doing the dirty work of these giant mega conglomerates. For example, NBC News is part of NBC Comcast Universal, which is international business in China, lots of business in China. And that's why a guy like John Cena, who is opening a movie, a Fast and Furious movie for Universal, that's why he praises China and says great stuff about China, and he won't even call Taiwan a country, even though it is. Well, Universal just opened a theme park in Beijing. And again, it's connected to the news business because NBC is part of this. And I realized that these news companies are becoming the palace guards for giant mega conglomerates. And that's why we'll never get a good investigation into China. That's why we'll never get a great movie with China as the bad guy. The vested interests are so deep. No clearer than in the case of Bloomberg, who is almost a monopoly in terms of how dominant Bloomberg is when it comes to financial news. It is by far the biggest news outlet in the finance world and maybe the biggest news outlet on planet Earth. They've got more journalists than the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and CNN combined. They make about $10 billion a year. That dwarfs what Fox and CNN make. And I saw all of these photos, literal photos that I found on Chinese propaganda websites, because that's where I went to do my research, of Bloomberg and his top executives flying to the literal propagandist, the Ministry of Propaganda in Beijing, and cutting deals with them. And it's all there in plain sight. If people are curious enough to look, they just aren't.
Right. No, you're right. And there's a cut of Bloomberg. I know Tucker played it when he was interviewing you, where he basically just says, yeah, we figure out the stories that they'll allow us to print and we print them. And very much along the lines of it's all business. But like you said, it's a lot more nefarious than that. I just want to reintroduce here Alex Marlowe, Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. You can get this book on Amazon. Now, speaking of the Amazon, you talk a lot about the masters of the universe and Twitter, Facebook, Google. That's also another thing, Alex, that the timing of this book, I mean, you did get really lucky because just today, a lot of these masters of the universe are saying, you know what? We actually will put some of this information regarding COVID back on our sites. They censored them, suspended some accounts, but now they're having a change of heart. And in your book, you talk about the danger of letting these people control what we're allowed to say.
Yeah, it's such a crucial point. And to watch Facebook all of a sudden, as of today, after basically a year of not just censoring this content, throwing you off of their platform, if you even entertain the idea that the coronavirus came from that lab, I mean, you'd have to be a fool to have believed Facebook when they said there was no chance. There was a lab right there where they're working on coronavirus. And we know we have no access to the Chinese media because it's the most closed press in the world. We know the only people who are allowed to investigate are the World Health Organization, which is funded by Beijing more than anyone else. Of course, we were only getting a partial picture of where the virus came from. And lo and behold, a year later, when so much damage was done to frame the coronavirus as a uniquely Trumpian problem, it had nothing to do with China, it was totally Trump's fault. Now, all of a sudden, you're allowed to post stuff speculating on the lab. It is such a joke, aside from it has huge implications in our electoral system. It has huge implications in our culture that speech can be censored by a few oligarchs in Silicon Valley who are doing the bidding of the Democrats.
Yeah, and speaking of that, what I loved about this book is that you actually call out this Trump virus, and that's how the media and the left want to portray it. And you say what everyone's thinking, but that what we're not really allowed to say or not supposed to say. You say it was the opportunity of a lifetime, a chance to massively expand government power, an opportunity to elevate the world's biggest corporations while crushing the individual and small businesses. And most important, an opening to convince Americans that our country had become a horrible, almost inhabitable hellscape because of the bad orange president. When you put it like that, Alex, it's kind of amazing that Trump was able to get as many votes as he did with all of this kind of going against him.
And he got more votes than he got the last time. This is why I'm a happy warrior, Grace, and I feel like you're my type of gal in this way, in that I think we're optimistic for this country. Because so many people saw the light, even though it wasn't enough necessarily to win or to quote-unquote win, discounting what the Silicon Valley and all these crazy cheap-by-mail rules, the effect that had on the election. But the fact that Trump got 75 million votes, and it's so many people hate the media now, their approval rating's never been lower, it's such a good sign. We are getting through to people. We need to move more quickly, but people are very open-minded to these ideas, and I think I was blessed enough that I had the platform to articulate some of this stuff, but I don't think everything I say in the book is going to be a shock. A lot of it is truly shocking, but some of it is just I got the chance to say what's on so many people's minds.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I feel the same way. After the election, obviously, it didn't go the way I wanted it to, but I did, you know, after the media and the like, the Nate Silvers of the world predicted that it was going to be a landslide, I was really proud of so many people who, like you said, saw the light and didn't buy all this. Because when you think about it, for a long time, I thought, if Trump loses this election, I'll be really bummed out. You know, I'll be really... But then once he lost it, I said, I'm not even that disappointed. I'm not disappointed in him or the voters, because there was nothing. We had so much coming at us. We had, like you said, the corporations and the media and the politicians. It was like, it was a perfect storm. And then this coronavirus came, and you're absolutely right. You quote Jane Fonda. She said it's God's gift. And that's really how they played it.
Yeah, that's right. God's gift to the left. And the point there that's important to emphasize, and where this book is going to differ from a lot of other books on media bias, is not just that I investigated new stuff, but it is the corporate element of it that comes in so strong. Who benefited from the coronavirus? The only places around the world that made more money were these giant tech corporations in China. Everyone else around the world had a terrible year. China still grew, and these big tech corporations grew, and they grew to a massive level. So they're already insane amounts of power. It became unfathomably huge because they managed to basically wipe out so many of their small business competitors because the government told them to. It's stunning stuff.
Alex Marlow, that's a great point. And before I let you go, I want to ask you one question. You use this expression a lot in the book, and it's you have to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels. And can you kind of explain to people what you mean? Because I read the book, I understand it, but explain to people what you mean and what you think people have to do to kind of change things.
Yeah, thanks for that. And this is a key thing where, I try to give some hope and some guidance for what to do next, because it's always very empty to just sort of complain about things. And I quote Mario Savio, who was the legendary free speech movement figure from UC Berkeley, where I went. And, you know, he's vaunted, he's treated as some sort of a saint if you walk around Berkeley. And he has this amazing speech where he talks about when the system gets so bad, you have to put your bodies on the gears, meaning you have to, as an individual, stop the system from functioning. That's where we're at with our corporate media now. We can no longer allow for our corporations to control so much of our freedom. We have to stand up to it. And I'm not talking about violence. I disavow violence. But short of that, we need to make a stink. We need to make our voices heard. We need to call them out publicly. We need to tell our friends and families that their behavior is not acceptable, what the NBA is doing, what so many of these corporations that rely on Chinese slave labor, what they're doing. And we need to call the managers of bookstores that won't put my book in the stores or won't put it up front because they don't like the content. You need to start getting vocal. And if we're not going to get vocal, then we're just going to get crushed by the activist left.
Alex Marlow, I'm so happy we had you on, and this book is really great. I encourage everyone to read it, Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. Alex, where can people find you on Twitter so they can keep up with what you're writing?
Yeah, at Alex Marlow, and Breitbart.com is always the place to go for my day-to-day work, and AlexMarlow.com if you want to pick up the book.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Spring is in the air. Imagine the smell of a freshly mowed lawn, buds on trees, and the thoughts that summer is on its way. It's on its way. I mean, a few days this week, it felt like it was here already. After a long, dreary winter, dreary, depressing, Dr. Fauci-filled winter, my prescription is a stay at the Follansbee Inn on the shores of Kezar Lake in North Sutton, New Hampshire. It's my favorite lakeside getaway. I've been there with my fiance. I went for a sister trip at one point. My parents have been there. They're going back this summer. It has the curly stamp of approval, and you're going to understand why. You wake up in the morning, you have a delicious homemade breakfast. Dennis is the innkeeper. He's also a chef. He's from New Orleans. Need I say more? The food is mouthwateringly good. You're going to love it. You're going to be stuffed for the rest of the day. It will take you right through lunch into dinner. That's how good this food is. And whether you're boating, swimming, or just relaxing with a book or walking around, if you love to walk and be outside, this is the perfect place. The Follansbee Inn is great for family gatherings, a personal retreat, or a romantic getaway. Reserve one of their 17 unique historic guest rooms, each with a private bath. I can't say enough about their complimentary breakfast. Your oasis awaits at the Follansbee Inn. Go to follansbeeinn.com and book now. That's FollinsBeeIn.com. It's spelled FollansBeeIn, FollinsBeeIn.com. We'll be back on the other side. We'll take some of your calls. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's the Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. So pumped we had Alex Marlowe on. It's a really great book. And it wasn't all the players you immediately associate with, like, the corrupt media. You know, there were some more subtle figures in there that I enjoyed reading about. Today's poll question is brought to you by the 110 Grill in Plymouth. Come celebrate my birthday tomorrow between noon and 6 at the 110 Grill in Plymouth. I'm so excited for this. We'll be giving away books, cake, and a chance to win a VIP in-studio visit. Make sure that you get to the 110 Grill in Plymouth. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
What's your favorite Biden fun fact of the week? That he has cookies in the morning, that he calls his wife Jilly, that he likes Haagen-Dazs ice cream, that he drinks orange Gatorade, that he lifts weights, that he brings sunscreen to a desert island as his one thing, or that he watches Morning Joe?
I'm going to say that he drinks orange Gatorade.
Orange Gatorade bad. Not a lot of love today. Just 13% say orange Gatorade. 27% like that he lifts weights. That is in the lead. Third place, he calls his wife Jilly at 19%.
He should put some paperweights in his pocket so he doesn't get blown over by the wind when it's like above. I don't even know. It wasn't even very windy that day when he took 4 tumbles up the stairs.
Come on, man.
Sorry, I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, POTUS. Mike from Maine, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, thank you, Grace. I just think over the last few months, I made an observation on Sniffer Joe since he allegedly won the White House.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched his cognitive deterioration over the last few months, and I've come to this conclusion because I've had some experience in this. We know he likes to project a tough guy image. So I'm thinking when this guy goes to the gym to work out, someone's hanging him from the ceiling and using his head for a speed bag.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying, Mike, but I don't know. Anyway, thank you for the call. Keep listening. Let's talk a little bit here about the latest in USA Today. So USA Today posted a column, which this has been happening a lot. I mean, the trans activists are getting very upset because, or the activists for the trans community, because 60 Minutes ran a piece the other day where they talked about people who had transitioned and regretted it. And then USA Today put out a story from a girl in Connecticut, and it was titled, "I was the fastest girl in Connecticut, but transgender athletes made it an unfair fight." Now, the story got a lot of play. A lot of people started running with this, and a lot of people were upset because they found the language that was used in this hurtful. So USA Today had to change it. Retroactively go back, you know, do a couple of stealth edits that completely change the meaning of what this girl was saying. And it really will blow your mind. Her name is Chelsea. She's a runner, obviously. And I'm sure she was, you know, in the running to get big time scholarships and all that good stuff. But because of our woke culture and acceptance and tolerance, Chelsea got pushed to the side. So she did this interview with USA Today, and wait until I tell you what they switched up. I mean, the word that they are claiming is hurtful language will blow your mind. I cannot believe we're at this point. And just remember this, when you start hearing about birthing people and human milk and they, them, and everyone says, oh, why do you care? You're making such a big deal out of it. It's faux outrage. You don't actually care if people say this or that. Words matter. And the destruction of words matter even more. We're going to get to this. You do not want to go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
All right, we are keeping the phone lines open today, 844-500-4242. USA Today blasted for editing column by girl forced to compete against males. Here's what they changed. Now, it's not a tough one to figure out what they've changed. They just eliminated a couple of words, some hurtful language. USA is facing backlash for editing a column from the fastest girl in Connecticut. So the original column was, "I was the fastest girl in Connecticut, but transgender athletes made it an unfair fight." That has changed because the editor's note at the top and changed the word male throughout the piece. This column has been updated to reflect USA Today's, I'm sorry, I should always read these liberal updates and corrections in a liberal update correction voice. This column has been updated to reflect USA Today's standards and style guidelines. We regret that hurtful language we used.
In my safe space.
For example, in the original column, Mitchell wrote, this is the fastest girl in Connecticut. She said, "Instead, all I can think about is how all my training, everything I've done to maximize my performance might not be enough, simply because there's a runner on the line with an enormous physical advantage, a male body." It now reads, see if you can spot the difference, everyone. "Instead, all I can think about is how all my training, everything I've done to maximize my performance might not be enough, simply because there's a transgender runner." I'm trying to see if, so she didn't mention transgender runner on the first one. "A transgender runner on the line with an enormous physical advantage." No mention of a male body, because apparently a male body is hurtful language, according to USA Today. How are we supposed to have any sort of rational discussion if we can't use our language?
We're not. We're just supposed to accept the government's deal, eat our plant protein, stay in our apartments, and just sit there and take it.
And you know what? This has been coming down the line for a really long time now. Birthing people, human milk. It's just, what's the thing, Jared, where they call breastfeeding?
Chest feeding.
Birthing people.
And it's all in the name of tolerance and equality and progressiveness. And it does the opposite. The person who is being discriminated against is the female. And I thought we were all for women empowerment. And now this girl is put at a disadvantage and she can't even say it. She's not even allowed to say it. Because that's a thought crime. And so we're going to have all this doublespeak and all this censorship. And then meanwhile, keep this in mind. I don't want to get revved up, but it is Thursday. And that's usually my day where I get a little pumped. That's offensive. To say a male body. Jared, do you have the dump button ready? I just said it three times and you seem to be fine with it. I hope we don't get fined. Now, this is what the journalists have no problem, you know, sending out to the universe. They see this story about the fastest girl in Connecticut and they're all sitting around the table going, "Oh God, how did we let this one through? And nobody caught that. She said a male body. Oh, we could be running out of this town. How did no one fix that? How did that get through?" And then someone else sends them along this column and they go, "Publish that. That looks good." It's called "The White Men Who Wanted to Be Victims" from the New Republic. The
racism, racism.
And I understand if you're reading this, this is probably going to get people very upset. It's a very offensive column.
Could you read the headline for me again?
"The White Men Who Wanted to Be Victims."
Men? How dare they, USA Today?
Oh, it's worse, Jared.
They're white personixes.
The author, Lemon Chris, on how from the Vietnam War to the present, aggrieved men cast themselves as a discriminated against minority. I'm going to read you a few of these excerpts and your mind is going to want to explode. But don't get angry. Not that anyone needed, by that point, any additional prompting to envision the ideal type of Vietnam vet as white and aggrieved. American pop culture in the 1980s teemed with fables of white Vietnam veterans fighting for recognition and some measure of vengeance in an America that preferred to ignore or abuse them. Bruce Springsteen's stadium rock anthem, Born in the USA, the title cut from an album that clocked more than 30 million sales, bemoaned the alienated state of its narrator, a returned Vietnam vet, between a shouted chorus that could well have doubled as a title for a track in the white ethnic revival genre.
Between red and blue.
Not surprisingly, the song drew accolades from President Ronald Reagan, whose re-election campaign briefly tried to adopt it as a theme, as well as Reagan-allied propagandists, such as high Tory opinion columnist George F. Will. Reagan's opponent, Walter Mondale, also... Do you know what Mondale did, Jared?
What did Mondale do?
Get the sound cut ready. He tried to seize on the song. I'm not sure if he tried to pounce, but I feel like we can still use it. He tried to seize on the song as a rallying cry, and even claimed that the boss had delivered an official Mondale endorsement. And now I'm going to skip to a different one. Returning Vietnam vets mimicked the rhetoric and strategies of the era's homegrown protest movements while developing a powerful narrative of abandonment and trauma to convey their own sense of disaffection. In other words, they wanted to be victims, and they still do. Well, Stephen Miller knows how to summarize things pretty well. I always say, I mention him like once a show. He retweeted the headline and said, "Going after crippled war veterans is a bold new direction for you guys. I wish you luck." The stories are just... And then what's allowed? And that's the part of this that I want to highlight. What we can say versus what we can say. Now, according to Chris Cuomo, just to circle back here to the China virus, according to Chris Cuomo, there's still no justification for the Trump slur that caused violence. Cut three.
Even still, there's no justifying Trump's China virus slurs that fed more violence here without any pushback from the concerned citizen you just saw there or any of the other Trumpers.
The virus slur, this is coming from the same guy who at one point tried to convince us, because what happened with Chris Cuomo, I could write a book about Chris Cuomo.
I got a lot of black friends.
I'm sure you do, Fredo. I could write a book about Chris Cuomo, and it would probably sell less copies than Andrew Cuomo's book, because I don't know anyone who wants to read about him. But one chapter would be devoted to the heckler. It wasn't even a heckler, really, to the guy who called him Fredo. He threatened to throw this guy down a flight of stairs because he's a tough guy. He's a meathead. He works out a lot. And then he tried to spin it. This is talk about trying to a white man trying to be the victim. Then he tried to claim that calling someone Fredo is an ethnic slur. So pardon me, dear Fredo, if I don't take your version of the word slur at face value, because we tried to compare you to a character in The Godfather, and you said that was an ethnic slur. So give me a break. And then CNN wonders why they've lost 70% of their viewership.
I thought that's who you were.
Oh, punk-ass bitches from the right call me Fredo.
Democrats are getting increasingly nervous about woke culture. And this goes along with everything I said. You can't say male body. You can't say China virus. You can't call out anyone. You can't speak nowadays. And I saw Chris Rock yesterday. He made a great point. He was talking about comedy. And he said, it gets really boring when everyone's afraid to actually just say something. Because comedy is one of those, you know, businesses where you try things and they fail. And Chris Rock's whole point was, You don't need to be punished for a bad joke. The punishment is the audience doesn't laugh. And then you have to sit with that. And it's brutal. And I believe that because I don't do stand-up, but I've had VIPs in here who don't laugh at my jokes and it hurts. But then I saw Seth Rogen came out today and said, well, if you say terrible things, then, you know, you deserve... He didn't say you deserve to be canceled, but you deserve to make amends for the terrible things you've said. But it turns out that most people don't. Most people would agree with the Chris Rocks of the world and not the Seth Rogans. A New York Times opinion writer wondered in a new op-ed on Wednesday if the progressive cancel culture push will backfire on Democrats at the polls. God, I hope so. Is wokeness kryptonite for Democrats? Times contributor Thomas Edsel's headline asked. Wokeness is kryptonite for Democrats. Most people hate it, other than the progressive activists. If you just look at America's policy preferences, Dems should be winning big majorities. But we have strong negative partisanship, and when people are faced with a party that seems to want to defund the police and rename schools rather than open them, all while crime is rising and kids' welfare is falling, the left flank of the party is just so easy for Republicans to run against. And I'm glad that that got brought up, because speaking of defund the police, we saw that the George Floyd Square, you know, they were having the one-year memorial event, and I think it was like 12 gunshots happened, and the reporter, you know, he didn't panic. He did a good job, you know, handling it, but it was just strange to see that here he is reporting on defunding the police, and there's gunshots going off behind him. So I'm sure he wanted to call the police. I'm sure he was hoping that policemen were there. Well, another situation like this happened. An Atlanta councilman, Antonio Brown, who voted to defund the police, had his car stolen. An Atlanta candidate who voted to defund millions of dollars from the local police department's budget reportedly had his car stolen by a group of young thieves this week. Antonio Brown had just gotten out of his white Mercedes coupe to speak to fellow community leader Ben Norman when he spotted four or five kids, the youngest six or seven. The children were walking around a store and within seconds were inside Brown's car. I think this is what Juan Williams once called a joyride. They tried to steal the car. Brown said he filed a report with the Atlanta Police Department. And that's the part of this. That's the part of this where I have questions, because according to Antonio Brown's, you know, policies and agenda and stances, he should have filed a police report with some social workers or some hippies. He shouldn't be calling the police or filing police reports. He's trying to defund the police. It's insane to me, because we always say a Republican is a Democrat who's been mugged. But what happens when people get mugged or get their car stolen or get their scholarships taken away because the transgender males running against them take away their chance, or, you know, get canceled? What happens when all that happens and they still don't figure it out? You know, they still don't have that moment of eureka. Our policies stink. And you could say the same thing about people who are in California and they move to Texas. It's like, that's fine if you want to move here. But did you figure out what went wrong? Did you figure out that as good as you feel after you vote, it creates a sucky place to live? So maybe don't bring that with you.
Sure, I burned my hand on the stove, but I got a new stove. So now I can put my hand on it all day long. Happen again.
How many times does it have to happen? It's insanity. That's what the definition of insanity is, doing the same thing and expecting different results. All right, when we get back, I'll take some of your calls. 844-500-4242. Hotels, vets, and dentists, they've all purchased multiple units of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, which is why the Eden Pure has done it again. You can save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier 3-pack. You'll get 3 units for under $200 and save $200. One for your basement, your first floor, and your second floor, all in one purchase. You've heard Dr. Matt on Howie's show. He has a Thunderstorm. He couldn't believe how effective it was, so he bought 2 more for his clinic, and he also got one for his son's smelly cat. And now it's fixed. I mean, you can't even smell the smelly cat. Jared loves the Thunderstorm because, well, 2 things, Jared. 1, you have allergies, yes. And it helps with that. But 2, you have a comic book section in your house.
Yes.
And you don't want it to get too damp down there.
Right. That's absolutely the key. If I need to get rid of dampness and odors in a basement setting, I would definitely use the Thunderstorm. I do use it in my comic book room, especially if you have a library, you have old books, you know, even old photo albums, they kind of get that sort of old smell. This helps absolutely get rid of it.
Absolutely. And if you act now, you can get this. You don't have to replace any air filters, and it saves you time and money. Other air purifiers are massive, bulky, expensive pieces of equipment. Not this. It's light, it's small, but it works. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Go to EdenPure.com, put in code word GRACE3 to save $200 for their special 3-pack. I'm going to say it one more time. EdenPure.com, code word GRACE3, and this special is 1 week only. We will be back with your calls, 844-500-4242. It's the Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to the Grace Curley Show. She's the friend you never knew you needed.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Okay, make that best friend. It's Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I can't believe it's Thursday. Time flies when the media is figuring out that the lab leak theory might be true. They're shocked. They're clutching their pearls. They can't believe they missed this one. So I mentioned earlier that Drew Holden, he's someone I follow on Twitter. He's keeping track of all of the about faces on this lab leak theory. And he brought up a great point. He was trying to predict what the next move was going to be from the mainstream media, all of these absolute corrupt, phony hacks. And he said it's going to be the, well, even if this did happen in a lab leak in China, what's the big deal? You know, the Hillary Clinton, what difference at this point does it make? And he was absolutely right, because right now, today, just as we said that, I don't know if this person who said it is a fan of the show, but on MSNBC, a man basically made that point. Jared, is this an expert?
Yes, this is Zeke Emanuel, the COVID expert of the White House, brother of Rahm Emanuel.
Wonderful. Oh, brother of Rahm Emanuel?
Yes.
Really? Was it a nationwide search? All right, let's play the expert's, you know, take on this situation.
The real issue is not how did this happen. The real issue is how do we protect ourselves from the next pandemic, and how do we have a kind of early warning system for whether it's naturally occurring or a laboratory leak. We still need to protect right. ourselves so we don't have 3, 4, 5, 10 million people die unnecessarily.
This would be like if your home got burglarized and the police came and you said, well, yeah, the guy left his hat here, so maybe we could figure out who actually did it. And the policeman said, hey, listen, the issue is not who stole your TV and all your valuables. The issue is, how can you prevent it next time? And you're like, yeah, but I would like to know, you know, how this happened. No, 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 no. Shh. The real issue here is, what do we do moving forward? No, the real issue is, if China is responsible for a lab leak that led to a massive pandemic, they should be held responsible. And any group here that was funding that research should also be held responsible. That's the real issue. And here's another thing, Jared, that I'm kind of sick of. I'm sick of people telling me what the real problem is. You know, like all these liberals, no, they want you to know what the real issue is. Maybe we know what it is. Okay? We got that covered. All right, when we get back, Bernie Sanders has a list of hotel demands, and we're about to have a lot of fun reading these to you. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.